Ready? I'm ready. You're listening to Tall Tales and Tattooing, New Zealand's tattoo podcast. Kia ora, I'm Craigie Lee, and you're listening to the Tall Tales and Tattooing podcast. I've got a bit of a tattoo history for you this week. The tattoo artist that I'm featuring has been dead for 90 years, so everything I've learned about him I've had to research through the newspaper archives, the Alexander Turnbull Library, and steamership records and stuff like that. I'd like to give a shout out to Rich Hardy in Australia, not only a good tattoo artist, but a damn fine tattoo historian who's found out quite a lot about tattooists in the South Pacific at the turn of the 20th century, both in New Zealand and Australia, and he helped me piece together the story. So this week I'm telling the story of tattooist Henry C. Swift. He tattooed in Wellington at the turn of the 20th century. When I first started this podcast, a lot of people started sending me photos to put on the Instagram of tattoo history. And Samantha Worry sent me a photo she had found in the collection of the Alexander Turnbull Library. The photo is of Wellington. It was taken, well, it's credited to be taken between 1908 and 1910, and it's of Post Office Square. The black and white photo shows a typical scene of the day, horses and carts and people walking around. But in the back of the photo, there's a small advertising billboard on a wall, and that billboard says tattooing, electric process, moderate terms. The bottom half of the billboard is partially blocked, but it reads something C. Swift, 165 Cuba Street. This photo blew me away because it's probably the earliest example of tattoo advertising in New Zealand. So I wanted to learn more about who Swift was, how long he tattooed in Wellington. And my first port of call was the National Newspaper Archive. And I was actually quite surprised how much written history there was about tattooing between 1900 and 1910. Advertisements and articles and all kinds of stuff. And it wasn't long before trawling through all this that a name popped up, Henry C. Swift. And once I had a name, I had something to go on, I had something to research, and I started to piece together a timeline of his tattoo career. I was also very lucky that I found an article online called A Tattoo Journey, which was written by Rich Hardy, who I mentioned earlier, and Carmen Nissen, that chronicles the travels of tattoo artists in the early 20th century. Henry Swift was among those featured in the article, and this gave me kind of a big breakthrough in terms of learning his story before he came to New Zealand. I learned that he was originally from the UK. He had tattooed in Leamington Spa in England, then he tattooed in Sydney in Australia and San Francisco. So he had a long career that kind of spanned the globe, and he was a very well-travelled artist. So this is the story of tattoo artist Henry C. Swift. Henry was born on the 7th of May 1880 in Greenock, Scotland. Not much is known about his early life, but like many men of the time, he had a stint of national service. He was a pipe corporal in the Scottish military. Obviously, there's no written record about his training or how he got into tattooing. In 1909, he claimed that he had 19 years experience, which would have meant he had started tattooing about 1890, but he would have been 10 then. This might seem like a bit of a tall tale, however, it might not be as far-flung as it seems, as London's most famous tattooist of the time, George Burchett, claims to have tattooed at the age of 12, tattooing his classmates at school. Henry was, however, very well established and tattooing in 1906 in St Albans. He seemed to travel around a lot. He also worked near Knightsbridge in central London, and he ran a successful supply company. And then a year later, in 1907, he was tattooing in Leamington Spa, which was around 2 hours northwest of London. And he took out an advertisement that was published in Spennel's Directory. This is a comprehensive directory of local businesses in the Leamington, Warwick and Neilworth areas, published by a local printer called Robert Spennel. The advertisement in this directory reads, Henry C. Swift, tattooist, high-class artistic tattooing in all shades and colour, thousands of designs, antiseptic process, latest scientific electrical instruments. To avoid disappointment, make an appointment, 88 Queen Street, Leamington Spa. However, he didn't stay in Leamington Spa for long. At the end of 1907, Henry left England on the SS Carinthic, departing London and arriving in Wellington via Cape Town. His steamership arrived in Wellington Harbour on the 1st of February 1908, and Henry disembarked with around 1,000 other passengers to start their new lives in the Southern Hemisphere. Tattooing was nothing like it was today. Cultural tattooing was commonplace in Maori tribes, but there was only a handful of artists using electric machines in New Zealand. Most of them were immigrants. Among these were Zana Isidore Percy, who owned the Zanani Art Studio and Tattoo Parlours at 98 Kay Road in Auckland. He boasted the very latest electrical appliances and most luxurious and up-to-date in the Southern Hemisphere. Bain and Boker in Palmerston North were also operating around this time, as well as tattooist F. Penn, who advertised tattooing by electricity in all shades and colours. Hundreds of designs to select from, tattooing outfits for amateurs sold. His premises was listed as the Central Chambers on Manor Street in Wellington. Very similar to Henry's circumstances, Penn had emigrated from London a few years earlier. He tattooed in Manchester Street in Christchurch before relocating to Wellington. And he would be the closest competition for Henry when he arrived in Wellington, though from what I've managed to find out, it seems that they became friends rather than rivals. There is a possibility that they met in England before Henry emigrated, or maybe they corresponded by post, as a lot of tattoo artists of the time did before Henry's arrival. I'm not sure how long it took Henry to find a shop and set up his studio, but by mid-1908 he was tattooing from 58 Molesworth Street, and this is when Henry decided to start advertising opportunities for his new business. On the 18th of January 1909, Henry took out an advert in the Evening Post which reads, "Tattooing, 10,000 designs from openwork stockings to complete costumes, electric process, Henry Swift, 58 Molesworth Street." Now, the first thing you notice here is he claims to have a huge amount of designs, a statement many artists of the time used to entice customers into their shop. And the wording is also very interesting, as it's really different to tattoo terminology today. Openwork stockings would have been sleeves or designs placed on arms and legs, while complete costumes probably means bodysuits, chest and back pieces. A few weeks later, on the 9th of February 1909, he was in the paper again, but this time in a story about a message in a bottle. On his long journey from England, stuck on a steamer ship with little to do, Henry wrote a message. He put it in a bottle and he threw it overboard. This bottle miraculously turned up in Otaki, just outside of Wellington. A local paper, The Dominion, published a story about the mysterious message in a bottle, which Henry read, and then he wrote a letter to the paper to solve the mystery. His letter, published at the time, said, "Dear Sir, I was surprised on reading my Dominion today to see that the bottle I threw overboard in mid-ocean, about halfway between Cape Town and Hobart from the SS Corinthic, had arrived in New Zealand. It was 12 months ago this month since I threw it over, and it seems wonderful to think that it has travelled upon the ocean at the very least 5,000 miles, or maybe 20 times that far. Could you please help me to recover the message to add to my stock of curiosities from various parts of the world?" It seems quite fantastical that if Henry had indeed thrown a bottle overboard on his voyage, that it would turn up almost exactly at his destination. He was obviously very good at advertising himself and using publicity to gain attention to his business, so it could have been a well thought out publicity stunt to gain space in the newspaper. The editor obviously thought some of his readers may find the story rather unbelievable, and he added an editor's note underneath Henry's published letter, which reads, "It is well known that the prevailing wind in the Southern Ocean in the whereabouts on the track of steamers bound to Australia and New Zealand from Cape Town are from the west, and the probability is that the bottle has taken the full 12 months to travel from a point somewhere west of Lewin to New Zealand via either Bass Straits or round the south of Tasmania." Henry continued tattooing through 1908 at Molesworth Street, though he suffered a couple of thefts during this time. He had one of his tattoo design books stolen, and then 6 weeks later he had another one stolen. This would have been extremely frustrating for him at the time, and these would have been very hard to replace and would have affected his income. He offered a reward of £1 for the recovery or information leading to the recovery of the copyright tattoo design books, which was a lot of money, equivalent to around $170 in today's money, which shows how keen he was to retrieve them. On the 9th of April 1909, Henry moved his studio from Molesworth Street to Cuba Street. The thefts may have contributed to the move, or maybe he simply thought it would be a busier spot and better for business. In 1909, Cuba Street was very similar to how it is today. It was a busy place. Electric trams ran up and down its streets, lined with hotels, fashion shops, tobacconists, and food and drink and retail outlets. It was known as the place to get a decent meal and a drink. Sailors in port flocked there to one of the many popular oyster bars, and it was the clientele that Henry wanted to attract. The move to Cuba Street would bring Henry closer to his only competition in the city, on Manor Street, F. Penn. It's not known if Henry knew F. Penn before he arrived in New Zealand. Maybe Henry worked for him when he first arrived in Wellington before he found his own premises. though most artists of the time did tend to work on their own. There was obviously no rivalry between Henry and Penn, because in the year that Henry had spent in New Zealand, he had managed to tattoo a back piece on Penn. He was keen to show off his larger scale tattoo work, and on the 20th of April 1909, Henry took out an advert in the Evening Post. Tattooing, call and see the largest tattoo design in New Zealand on the back of F.R.H. Penn by Henry Swift, London's premier tattooist, 165 Cuba Street. See window for specimens of work, 5,000 clients, 200 in Wellington alone. On the same date, Henry took out an ad in another newspaper, which read, tattooing with electric needles in all colours, prices from 1 shilling. Come and inspect, Henry Swift, 165 Cuba Street. Away from the other tattooists of England, and with nobody to challenge him, he made many big claims in his adverts to build up his reputation. He boasts of 5,000 clients worldwide and 200 clients in Wellington alone, an impressive feat for an artist who had only been tattooing in the city for around a year. He also claimed to be London's premier tattooist, to have tattooed royalty, and even go as far as saying he'd invented the electric tattoo machine. All big claims, and with no one to be able to check these, there was no Google back then, a lot of people would have probably just believed him. London was the biggest city in the world. Royalty such as princes, kings and queens were the celebrities of the time, and many tattooists claimed to have them as patrons to gain more work. Just as in today, celebrities, the royalty of the time were the celebrities, and everything they did, the public wanted to copy. Electric tattooing and the tattoo machine were a relatively new invention. They were invented almost simultaneously in 1891 by Samuel O'Reilly, putting a patent in on the United States for a rotary machine, and Thomas Reilly putting in a patent for an electromagnetic machine in London just 20 days later. It was very probable that the machines that Henry was using were the same ones that Thomas Reilly had designed. Both were in London around the same period. They may have even been purchased for Thomas Reilly, as he was making and selling production machines at the time. 1909 brought a lot of change for Henry's tattoo studio. Along with moving locations, Henry also started heavy advertising in the local papers, sometimes as many as 3 times a week. He also took out the advertising billboard on Post Office Square that I found in the photograph, and possibly other locations around the city, who knows. He was selling tattoo equipment, everything from electric tattoo engraving machines to needles, inks, designs and transfers. And he was now tattooing on Cuba Street, one of the busier streets of Wellington. Now, Henry may have known that Penn was going to move, which was maybe why he decided to move closer to his competitor. In 1909, in June, Penn closed up his studio on Manor Street, and he returned to tattoo from his old premises in Christchurch for 2 weeks before making the move up to Auckland. He opened a studio and tattooed at 31 Pitt Street. In a new city with new clientele, he started calling himself Professor Penn, similar to many tattooists of the time who claimed to be a professor of tattooing. Now, this move would have been great for Henry, as he now had no competition in Wellington. However, bad luck seemed to follow him, as on the 31st of August 1909, he had another incident of theft at his studio. This time, he caught the offender red-handed. According to the evidence, the accused stole a tattoo machine from its position on Henry's wall and placed it in his pocket. A little while later, the machine fell out of his pocket and he was sprung. The incident went before the magistrate's court, where Timothy Donovan was charged with stealing a tattoo machine valued at £1.05, the equivalent of around $200 today. On the 2nd of November 1909, it was advertised in the Manawatu Standard that Henry was headed to Palmerston North for a guest appearance. An advert for this reads, "Tattooing by electricity, Henry Swift is in Palmerston for a few days and can be seen on the showground or next evening standard, the square. Patronised by royalty, original inventor of the electric tattoo machine." Then on the 28th of February 1910, Henry had another incident at his studio. It was reported there was a charge of assault right outside, and Henry was a chief witness. He charged out of his shop to interfere and to help, and he received a rather severe cut to his lip. Henry didn't turn up to give evidence, and the magistrate stated a warrant would be issued if necessary to obtain Henry's presence in court. A few months later, in May 1910, after less than a year away, tattooist F. Penn announced he was returning to Wellington and would be taking over the business of Henry Swift, and would be glad to see old and new customers. Henry's time in Wellington was coming to an end. There seem to be quite a lot of articles in the press or the New Zealand newspapers between 1908 and 1910, and they were all very negative, which may have been bad for business and had an effect on Henry. One article claimed, "Tattooing was one of the most ancient customs of barbarous nations." Another reads, "Tattooing is all very well for soldiers and sailors and savage belles. For the majority of us, it is just dangerous." And another one reads, "Art of tattooing among civilized nations is dying out." Though this couldn't have been further from the truth. With the invention of the electric tattoo machine, people were starting to think of tattooing as a business, and that business was growing all around the world. By the end of the 20th century's first decade, 1910, many barbers and tobacconists around New Zealand were advertising tattooing on premises and selling tattoo machines and supplies. Every large city in the country now had a tattooist operating there. Maybe tattooing in Wellington just wasn't as lucrative as Henry was hoping. Maybe the negativity in the newspapers did have an impact on his business. Maybe he just had enough of the thefts and the incidents that were happening to him while he was living and working here. We'll never know. But with his shop in safe hands, leaving it with F. Penn, he was finished up tattooing and he left Wellington in August 1910, where he returned briefly to England, and he was back in the Southern Hemisphere by November, settling in Sydney. Interestingly, F. Penn followed not too long after, and he settled down in Sydney in 1914, tattooing in Enmore Road in Newton. So there you have it. That's the tale of Henry C. Swift. Well, the tale of Henry C. Swift in New Zealand, because this is a New Zealand tattoo podcast. He was clearly a man that wasn't afraid to stand up for himself and others. He was an astute businessman, running many adverts and billboards across Wellington and travelling to show off his skills in Palmerston North. When he wasn't working, he was involved in the Wellington Pipe Band, sticking to his Scottish roots and culture. And while he wasn't the first tattooist in New Zealand to tattoo electrically with machines, he certainly was a pioneer in terms of running his studio as a business is and making use of all the advertising that was available to him at the time. He corresponded with many tattoo artists around the world, and like many artists at the time, he travelled a lot in search of a better business and a better life, I guess. Similar to his time in Wellington, Henry only stayed in Sydney for around 3 years, and then he moved on to San Francisco, where he continued to tattoo, and he passed away in 1929. I'm really happy that there's so much written history about Henry and it was so accessible with just a little bit of time and research to be able to find it all and piece his story together and be able to share it with you. One of the reasons I wanted to start this podcast was to learn and share New Zealand's tattoo history so it was out there for everybody. And I really find this is an incredible story. 1909, man, that's fucking such a long time ago. It's mind-blowing. So I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. There's a few other tattoo artists of that kind of era that I've slowly started researching and reading a bit about, but there doesn't seem to be as much around about them as Henry. So I'm hoping in the near future I will be able to share their history with you in another episode. And there's definitely a few people in New Zealand that are around that I would like to sit down and do a couple of episodes on tattoo history with. So if you know about any old tattoo artists, if you've got any cards or anything or heard any stories, drop me a message on the Instagram and let me know, because I'd love to piece together a kind of a timeline or a kind of family tree of tattoo artists from, you know, 1890, whatever, up until like 1930s. I think it would be incredible because people just don't know about a tattoo artists of that era. Thanks very much for listening. This is the last episode in this little series of episodes. Unfortunately, because of the COVID-19 situation, I was unable to get out and carry on recording episodes with people that I wanted to. So I'll pick that back up later in the year and have some more episodes with some more artists from around New Zealand coming very soon. This week's episode of Tall Tales and Tattooing was brought to you by the COVID-19 pandemic. Stay safe, stay the fuck at home.